This show is about freedom. Freedom from your constant struggle with food and letting the size of your thighs determine your worth. Join me weekly for no hold back, unfiltered, girlfriend kind of conversations that'll inspire, teach, and empower you. As we tune into our own body's wisdom and tune out of the diet industry's lies, we can live our most radiant, pleasurable, and fulfilled lives. My name is Chancey Dawn. I'm a non-diet nutritionist, embodiment, and mindset coach. But most importantly, I'm a woman on a mission to grow a deeply connected and conscious relationship with food and my body. And I'm here inviting you to do the same. Let's go. Hello, my friend. Welcome to today's show. I am super looking forward to you listening in on this conversation I had with Jen Messina, because I really think that as we're doing our own work on healing our relationship with food and body, we really want to be able to teach our children from such a beautiful, young, impressionable age how to not have a messed up relationship with food and body. How beautiful for them to grow up without having to undo or relearn or, you know, decondition anything, right? We just want them to have the freedom that they deserve and the freedom that we're growing into as adults. So really excited to have Jen on here. I loved our conversation. She answered some questions that I've had burning for a while, and it was really fun. And it's kind of crazy because I don't know Jen. I have never met her before. She's just a woman, a dietitian who I found on Instagram and started following. And I really, really liked what she was putting out there. It very much aligns with what I teach and believe and live and how I'm raising my own kids. So tons of cool tools, tips, and just a lot of deep wisdom to gain from Jen. So Jen is a registered dietitian, and she's based in beautiful BC in Vancouver, very close to me, actually. And Jen is passionate about all aspects of holistic health and practices through the lens of health at every size and intuitive eating. She works with individuals who are ready to break up with dieting and find balance with joy and food. And she also works with families looking to support their children to have a healthy relationship with food and their bodies. So yes, this girl is right up our alley. Can't wait for you to listen. Enjoy. Welcome, Jen, from North Vancouver. You're so close to me, and I think that's pretty neat because most of my guests are, you know, in the States and stuff. And when I saw you on Instagram and then we started connecting, I'm like, oh my gosh, she's a BC girl. Isn't that fun? Because I'm just on the island. So
that's nice. I love it.
Yeah. So welcome. Thank you so much for coming on. I know we were just chit-chatting a bit before I pushed record, just about how I find, you know, what we're going to talk about today so exciting and so valuable for all the moms, aunts, grandmas, everyone listening in. If we can get all of the grandmas, moms, aunts, sisters, big sisters who are working on healing their relationship with food and their bodies, if we can learn how to reach the youth, how to teach mm-hmm. them, how to raise them with a very flowing, beautiful, like easy relationship with food as kids are born to have, right? So mm-hmm. we can keep that. That's what I think. It's almost like we don't want to condition them out. We want to preserve what they already know and what we are relearning now as women who are healing our relationship with food in our bodies. It's just such a gift to be able to learn from you so that we can then help our kids. So Jen, I would love for you to share your story. Of course, I read your bio, but if you could just share your heart story of what brought you to this place of, as a registered dietitian, now working with, is that you work with children or you mostly work with the moms and dads helping their kids? Tell us all about it.
So I work primarily with families, like in parents, because I never want a child to feel like there's quote unquote something wrong with them. Mm. So that's why I work with parents. And we don't really talk about that they're working with a dietitian. So I came to this place similar to many other dietitians in my area from a very diet and weight centric paradigm. So I grew up in the 90s and early 2000s where it was just so mainstream to diet and to thinness was like, the beauty ideal, for so long. Yeah. And even my schooling, I came into wanting to be a dietitian because I had struggled with my body image as a child. And looking back, as many of us do, thinking of how we thought our body was the wrong size from such a young age, I came into wanting to become a dietitian because I wanted to crack the code and to figure out how I could live like in a thin body without dieting. So, it was actually pretty like, and for many dietitians, like a lot of us had a disordered relationship with food in our body. And that's what drew us into the area. It's not talked about that much. But if you are obsessed with food and weight in your body, like what a perfect area to go into. Right. So, I think the schooling is getting better from what I've been hearing from some of the students like in this day and age. But when I was a student, which was in the early 2000s, it still was very weight and diet centric. So, I was schooled in that area. I practiced in that area, unfortunately. But as I started practicing for longer, I realized that many of the clients would come back to me time and time again, with some of the, advice that I'd given them. And yes, they could lose weight in the short term, but then it came back plus some. So after seeing that in my own practice over and over again, I started diving into like the weight science literature and like weight regain literature. And then that leads you down the tail of like intuitive eating, health at every size. Like, do we even need to be talking about weight? Is weight even that important? And then having my own children, I have a daughter who's 7 and I have a son who's 5. I started thinking about as a child, like when did I start thinking that my body wasn't right for me? And that started very early, like probably around the same age as my daughter, because my family is all in a traditionally like thin bodies, like genetically. And I was in a slightly larger body and I'm still talking from a place of thin privilege. Yeah. And obviously, have you talked about thin privilege and like, what does that mean? Like in the past?
No, I'm that's slotted on the calendar for an entire episode. Yes. So the listeners will for sure be
learn about that. So a Cole's notes on thin privilege is just that it's not that thinner bodied people think that they're quote unquote better than others. It's just that they have unearned privileges based on their body's genetic predisposition. So they have privileges such as being able to shop at a mainstream store, being able to sit on an airplane seat without needing a seat extender, basically surviving in the world without having people constantly telling you that your body is wrong. Yeah.
Medical care that they deserve.
Exactly. Like when, and so I go to the doctor, if I go to the doctor with knee pain, the doctor does not say to me, you need to lose weight. The doctor says, oh, like, let's look into physiotherapy. Let's look into, an x-ray or whatever. So a person in a larger body might be given, the prescription to lose weight. So that's just the lens that my family, we grew up in thin bodies. And so my body was slightly larger than theirs. And so I always felt different and that I was, my parents didn't micromanage what I ate, but there was always this kind of underlying, my mom was dieting. There was this underlying kind of thought that thinner bodies were better bodies and that sort of thing. So that was the kind of where I grew up. And so when I had my own kids, I thought that for me, I really don't want my child in whatever body she's going to grow up to be in. We know that predominantly our body size is genetically predetermined. So, her body size will likely be what it is, regardless of like, we think of diet and exercise as having such a huge role in terms of our body size, but that's only one small piece of the puzzle when we look at like where someone's body size ends up. So that's kind of the, that is an abbreviated version, but after having my own children and going down the rabbit hole, once you see diet culture for what it is, it's very hard to not see it everywhere.
So true. Yeah. Oh, so good. And how wonderful for your little ones, right? And so let me ask you, when did it start with your kids? Like, was it right away? How did you like feeding on demand? Or like, I would love to learn that just from the basic of here's your baby. Mm-hmm. And now how are you going to raise this little baby as an intuitive eater from day one?
Yeah. So I think like, if you look into like, as a dietitian, I love the research. So then automatically I'm like, what does the research say on like best practices for feeding babies? Right. Yes. So then where we find the gold standard in feeding children is a feeding philosophy known as a division of responsibility in feeding. Okay. And that was created by a registered dietitian, Ellen Satter. And it's been studied and researched and found to be what we call best practice in feeding kids. So as a baby, it's responsive feeding. So it's feeding on demand. Mm-hmm. It's breastfeeding, not on a schedule, but as your baby, or bottle feeding as your baby is interested in eating, and allowing them to eat as much as they want. So, you know, we don't stop the baby from, you know, if the guidelines say 52 ounces of milk, we don't stop them at 52 ounces. Sometimes they'll have more, sometimes they'll have less. So that's the feeding philosophy, which starts as responsive feeding and then transitions into this practice of division of responsibility, which essentially says that parents have certain roles, and the roles of the parents are the what, when, and where of feeding. So we get to decide what's on the plate, when it's being offered, and where it's being offered. And the children get to decide from what's provided, which of these foods do they want to eat, and whether or not they're going to eat anything at all. So parents set the environment up, and then kids decide from what's provided what they want to eat. So where I hear a lot of stumbling blocks here is like a family will say to me, well, I gave them chicken and rice and blueberries, and all they wanted to eat was the blueberries. So do I let them have more blueberries? Like, do I make them have a few bites of chicken? Like, and I would say to them that we'd want to listen to what the child is asking for. And so if they're asking for more blueberries, if it's in our budget and we have that available, then we let them have seconds and thirds of whatever food that we provide, because we decided the menu and they decide from the foods that we've provided, which ones do they want, even if that's 2 cups of blueberries. Now, financially, that might not be possible for all families. So sometimes, and even in my own household, like sometimes I'll say, you know what, like we need to save some of those for the lunch boxes because I'm not going grocery shopping every day. So sometimes it doesn't always work out, but in other instances, say they want more rice. So I'm going to let them have seconds, thirds of rice as much as they want without having the caveat that they have to eat anything else. So that practice really allows children to tune into what their body is asking for. And parents often think that children are going to eat like a balanced plate of a little bit of everything. But what actually happens in most kids is they eat 1 to 2 foods per meal, and they eat a larger amount of those things. So like for my own family, like my son might eat like cheese. Like if it's a cheese sandwich, he might just want the cheese and eat like doubles and triples of cheese and nothing else. And that's okay, because the next meal all he'll want is blueberries. And then the next meal, all he'll want is the bread. So if we look at a child's intake, I mean, with some exceptions, like of course, if there's like pediatric feeding disorders, or there's certain conditions like autism or things like that, there's always going to be exceptions.
Yeah.
But for the majority of kids, when we look at their intake over a 2-week period, and I've actually personally done this with lots of families who are really worried about their kids eating, we actually see that they even out in terms of their nutrient needs over a 2-week period. So they might not eat balanced over one day, but they definitely will eat balanced over, you know, a longer period of time. So, so we're allowing children to tune into what their body's asking for and eating as much of those foods as they want within the parameters of parents setting the meal and snack schedule. So we're not just leaving the cupboard open and they're having like a free for all eating goldfish all day.
Yeah.
You know, we're setting the schedule, we're setting the foundation, we're choosing the meals as parents, but we're not choosing of the foods we provide, which foods they can have seconds and thirds of.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you're working with a family and they're starting to work more on that meal schedule, and the parents plan the meals, and then the kids get to choose from that, what happens if an hour later, if it's like, nope, this isn't when we're planning the snack or planning the meal, and then your kid's like, hey, I'm hungry, because they only ate carbs and they didn't have about the protein to balance it or whatever, right? So their body's like, oh, I'm hungry again. Do you talk about that? Like, if you would have had some protein, you would have been able to wait till snack time, and like teach them that? Or do you just go, okay, here's some snack options? Or what do you do in that situation?
So good question. So generally we try to advise parents to have meals and snacks for younger children. about every 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
And for older children, every 3 to 4 hours. So, you know, that would be mimicking more the school schedule. So if they eat breakfast at say 7:30 or 8, then snack time's at 10, lunch is at 12:30, snack is at 3, dinner's at 5:30, you know, so that kind of 2 to 3 hours for the younger kids, 3 to 4 hours for older. So say they only eat, like you said, they only eat a piece of bread or two pieces of bread for lunch, and then they're hungry. Generally, we don't advise to teach nutrition till the older ages of like even grade 6 and 7, because nutrition is very nuanced. And so then it's confusing for children to learn about protein and fat and carbohydrate and how those affect our body, because it's a lot more detailed than, because there's all sorts of other factors. Like, you know, if they added more fat to that, like it might help with satiety factors, and like protein might prevent their blood sugars from rising and falling. So in general, we would just say, I would say, for my example, for my own family, because I have littler kids, I would just say, you know, snack time is actually at 3 o'clock. So we're going to go play blocks right now, but next time maybe have, make sure you fill your belly or have a little bit more at mealtime so that you have more energy for longer. So I keep it really simple. I don't talk about, because again, then it gets into good and bad. So like you only ate the bread. So you should have had protein because protein is good and carbs are bad. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like they still can get into that nuance. So in general, I would just advise them, and say, for example, one of my children were to only have a few bites of dinner, often I'll warn them, like, just so you know, this is the last meal we're going to be having for 2 more hours. So make sure your belly has enough food in it, because we're not going to be, we're just not going to be eating for a while. Because, and then in the beginning, they will test you. Like if your family is one that snacks, like, or your kids want to snack often, and you're trying to set a different foundation, if you're trying to, like, I find it's, you know, annoying for kids to be in the cupboard nonstop, because then they don't have a good appetite. It's like, unfortunately, like when we let them snack all day, then it sets them up for not eating well at meals, and then they are hungry right away. So we want them to have an appetite at actual meal and snack time, and offer a balance of, you know, if you're having a snack, it should be like a couple different things. So I think of it as like a mini meal. So not just goldfish, but we would add like grapes and some cheese, or we would add some nuts or whatever it is that you're, you know, your kid is wanting to have as a protein at that meal or snack, sorry. But yeah, I think like if the child is hungry right away afterwards, I would just kind of keep it pretty neutral. They might have a temper tantrum the first few times, but over time they'll learn that they need to fill up at meal and snack time, and they're not going to get to graze in between. So in the beginning, you might need to set like I used to set a timer on my microwave. So they would have a countdown to when it was the next time to eat. Or there's also like a visual timer you can get on online that shows like a visual countdown. So initially it will cause a little bit of pushback. But of course there's going to be extenuating circumstances when parents really know best in terms of what their kids need. So say it's a busy day and they didn't have much of a chance to eat for whatever reason. And you know, you want to kind of adapt and change to what you think is appropriate. Like their kids are going to go through growing streaks. They're going to also, you know, have busier days where they're like more active and be more hungry. So we attune to also changing the schedule. You know, we can adjust the schedule slightly if we think that it's appropriate. It's not like a hard and fast food rule. It's, you know, it's a guideline, I always like to say. So as parents, we get to decide like what is, like, for example, say you have like a hot dog for lunch at a birthday party and cake, and they're hungry sooner because maybe they didn't have quite as much as they normally did. Then you might adjust your snack times accordingly, based on the situation. Right. So, always think of it as like a flexible meal schedule, but try and think of, you know, those regular meals and snacks, to help kind of nail down the timing of eating, especially if it's like an unstructured time, like the summer or springtime when things are kind of up in the air on spring break and stuff like that. So that would be my recommendation for that situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Such great information. Another question I have, of course, I'm sure this always comes up, is the sugar debate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So I studied as a holistic nutritionist and before I had children, and then I had my kids, and I was ridiculously obsessed with no sugar. So I've changed a lot over the years in my practice. Okay. Like we often do. Very similar story. Went in for my own food hangups. I actually got more food hangups, and then I healed from my food hangups, and now I'm helping others. Right. So, the sugar thing, it was like, it was the devil. right? And I was like terrified of my kids having it. I was terrified of anyone seeing my kids possibly have it. Like, remember once I had ice cream with my kids and people knew I was a nutritionist and we were at the park and I ran into people and I felt shame. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like, is this what I'm actually teaching my kids? Right. And I really, that it was when that started happening and my kids were starting to have these not disordered, but awkward relationships with food that I was teaching them, that I'm like, okay, something needs to change. And that really started helping me go, well, how, what do I want to do different here? So sugar is a really hard thing for so many parents, right? Because there is this like diet culture morality attached to it. There's fear in it. There's just a lot of misinformation. There's just so much out there. And for my kids, I've had to retrain them so that they feel not afraid of it. And so can we just talk about that, right? Because I'm aware of it, but most people aren't, right? Sugar is the monster, sugar is the devil. And teaching the kids this, this is one of the biggest things that concerns me in our, you know, culture today. So can we talk about that a little?
Yeah. And so, yeah. So, I mean, my kids have been really raised in a food neutral home. And, and so I've really tried to emphasize that, like, there are foods don't have any moral value. So it doesn't mean you're good or bad because you eat a certain way. And then I often say to them, like, all food gives us something. So some foods give us more nutrients and vitamins to grow, and other foods give us more joy and pleasure. So my daughter came home from day camp last year and she said, my camp counselor said that sugar is bad for me. And so we had a discussion. Well, what do you think about that? Well, I like sugar. Like it's enjoyable. She was saying how she likes it. And so we talked about, like, what does healthy mean? Like, what does it mean? What does healthy mean? Like, so healthy in our family means that food gives us energy to grow and do the things we want to do, but it's also joyful and fun. So, you know, food is all. And so she'll now say, like, someone will say, that's unhealthy. And she'll say, do you know that all foods are healthy? And they'll say, what? Like, all foods aren't healthy. And she'll say, well, all foods give us something, don't they? Like, so, and so it's really teaching them and unlearning the mindset that, like, and even I have trouble with this because, for example, my children wanted a Slurpee. And in my mind, my, like, alarm bells are going, I'm like, there's absolutely no nutritional value in a Slurpee. Like, a Slurpee is pure sugar and zero else. But then the other little, you know, voice in my head said, well, is, what about joy? Like, and remembering the times that myself as a child got a Slurpee on those hot days and the joy of enjoying it and the pleasure in having that cool, refreshing taste. And yes, it doesn't have any nutritional value, but it has a value because it's joyful. Yeah. So, you know, for my kids, like, they'll say to me, well, and, you know, I don't allow them to have Slurpees all the time. Like, we might have it very occasionally. But if they say to me on a day that I haven't planned to serve a Slurpee, they'll say, you know, mommy, can we get a Slurpee? And I'll just say, that's not on the menu for today. You know,
that,
so I try to
actually, that one phrase, I saw a reel you did, I think, like, a while ago. And that one, it's not on the menu today. I mean, my kids are teenagers, right? But I have these bonus little ones now with my partner. I'm like, oh my God, that is golden. And that's actually when I was like, I reached out, do you want to be on the podcast? Because that one thing has actually really, really helped with these little bonus kids. Because they're, it's just not on the menu. And they're like, oh okay.
I'm like, well, that was easy. Totally. Yeah. So there's no morality. There's no, like, you've had too much sugar already today or anything like that. It's just like, yeah, it's not on the menu, but why don't we add that on the weekend or whatever? Like, you can have it another time. Right. So I get to decide as the parent, like, when the sugary foods are served. And so, like, you know, if my kid is at a birthday party and they're eating cake and then later they want to have ice cream, I get to decide whether it's something that we have. And sometimes I just say, yeah, it's not on the menu. And I don't really get a lot of pushback because it's just been part of our dialogue. So I think parents are worried about sugar because they're worried that their kids are going to be obsessed with sugar and want to eat it all the time. But in restriction leads to obsession. So if you don't allow your kids to eat sweets, then they will be the ones at the convenience store when they're 12 years old gorging themselves on candy and chocolate and the Slurpees and all of that that you've worried about for 12 of their years of their life. So we want to teach them to be around sugar, to not fear it, to not, it's just another thing. Like now, you know, I put sweets in my kids' lunch boxes literally every single day. So there's something sweet, whether that's gummies or whether that's a piece of chocolate. Like I'm not putting in like, you know, a pack of candy every day, but it's something small that they can have. And, you know, it's funny. I saw this little boy from one of my daughter's classes and he says, Madeline's mom, you pack the best lunches every day. And I'm not packing anything special, but I do include, like today they had mini Oreos. So I, instead of giving them a full pack of it, I open the package and I give them a few of them.
Yeah.
But they have something every day. So, you know, I go to the grocery store with them and they're not begging for candy or sweets. Like they're not, we don't have this like obsession because it's just part of our daily routine. Like we just have, and like, sometimes I serve dessert with dinner. Sometimes I don't, again, I get to decide. But I don't have like a lot of, there's not a lot of hype with it. Yeah. It's not like that big of a deal, which is, I think what parents are aiming for.
Yeah. And I really think that's really important. Just as you said, making it neutral, because even with the restriction of, yes, okay, you can have these Oreos, but if you're saying, oh, here's your sugar and you better behave after, and this better, you know, and kind of villainizing it, that even as we know as adults, right, we can have permission, but in the background, there's all those thoughts and that's actually restriction. And then we overeat, right? Or binge. And so that's, I see that. And I think that depth of healing our relationship with food, so then it actually truly is neutral to us, you know, that's so important. So it's not just like, okay, we're going to here, have these Oreos and inside you're dying. And then your children can actually feel this. It's that importance to work on you as you're teaching your kids.
And parents don't need to be all the way there to teach intuitive eating to their kids. Like many of us like are inundated with diet culture since of, like we were children. So, you know, maybe that's 30, 40 years, right? So I think parents often will say to me, well, I still am struggling with my own relationship with food. Can I teach my children to have a healthier relationship with food? And I say, yes, absolutely. You don't have to be all the way there. There's lots of steps you can take. You know, certain things like not talking about your body in a negative way, right? Not talking about earning your food or needing to burn your food or work off your food. So there's certain things we can say. And also, like with the Oreos or whatever, trying to eat some of those foods yourself. It's not just saying they're okay, but also modeling. Like it's not that you're having a salad and everyone else is having pasta, right? So it's trying to neutralize for yourself and focus on, you know, eating this ice cream with my kids is teaching them that all foods fit. And so, you know, trying to be present in the moment, and even though sometimes it can be difficult, is, you know, you can still help your children have that healthier relationship with food than you did, by trying to model that you feel comfortable in your body, even if you're not all the way there, but like wearing the shorts, wearing the bathing suit, not talking negatively about your body and focusing on other functions. So, Beauty Redefined, which is a page I really like on Instagram, they talk about like focusing on the body as an instrument, not an ornament.
Yes. Yes.
So like, what can your body do?
Yeah. I love that. And instead of the body positivity, it's more of the body neutrality as well.
Yes.
And I think that that is key. You know, I love that. So, you know, when you're talking about this, not having to be there, I'm like, thank freaking God, because I'm not there. Like I still, you know, and I'm like, I'm a coach. This is what I help women with. Right. And with my own children. And I think that understanding it is a journey. It's a lifelong journey. And when we're inundated with the diet culture messages and all of these different things that we've been taught over the years, helping your children learn this, raising them this way, and coaching other women, it's also a part of your own healing journey in it, right? So
definitely,
it's like the family learns together. And that is, that's so good. So I have two more questions. So the one is, so if you have not raised your children as intuitive eaters, saying they're nine, okay, and your kid thinks sugar is a villain, and there's all of these food rules and all of this stuff, and then you learn this and you're like, oh, okay, what can you expect? Some like roadblocks, some obstacles as you're now retraining your children in this, right? Showing them food neutrality and body neutrality and all of that, mm-hmm. and bring them into this. What can you expect? My number one thing that I wonder is if kids are like, I'm going to eat all the sugar. And that's kind of a scary thing because of the maybe unbalance of it in the beginning before things start to level out. Do you see that? And what mm-hmm, else?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think like, first and foremost, you're never too early to start. Like I have a family and they've got a 2-year-old and we're already working on body positivity. Mm-hmm. The little girl is in a larger body. Like that's just her genetic predisposition, but it's also never too late. So children love hearing their parents say that they've made mistakes. Mm-hmm. So I think you can say to your, you know, if you're learning about this different way of talking about food and supporting your kids to have that healthier relationship with food, and this sounds like something that you're interested in, then you can sit them down and say, you know what? I think I've been doing things a little, you know, haven't been doing things the way that I've been wanting to. And I think that I've actually been, you know, sending messages that certain foods are good foods and certain foods are bad foods, which can lead to guilt and shame. You know, and you know, you can, whatever's going on for your family, you can identify, like, I think I've been doing things a little bit backwards and I'm going to be doing a few things differently. So you're going to be noticing the following. I'm no longer going to be commenting on what you eat at mealtimes. I'm going to let you eat as much as your body is asking for. We're going to be serving dessert more often. We're going to try to be neutral around desserts. If you want seconds on desserts, the other thing I often will talk to families about is allowing what we call unlimited dessert sometimes. So most of the time, if you're serving dessert, I suggest having a child-sized portion. So, you know, I don't suggest having like a whole cake at the dinner table and letting unlimited amounts of dessert, but I would say sometimes offer unlimited amount. So we do this in the form of, you know, maybe once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks, we call it unlimited day. So my kids mm-hmm. will decide what they want. They'll say, they use their piggy bank money. I want to go buy some candy. So they buy candy and we let them eat as much as they want in one sitting. Mm-hmm. So usually I recommend doing this in the afternoon, not right before bed. And I'll say, go for it. And they'll eat. My kids at this point don't eat a ton. They'll like eat more than I, you know, would have portioned for them on their dinner plate, but they don't eat like, you know, ridiculous amounts, but your child might eat a lot and they might actually barf. So I have had families as they're transitioning to this more intuitive eating style for kids, like while children are learning their own boundaries around dessert, they might eat so much that they barf. And I think mm-hmm. learning from these moments of feeling really unwell, like children learn from experience, right? Like if we're teaching a child to walk, we don't hold their hand the whole time. We let them fall, right? Mm-hmm. We keep the boundaries and we're making sure they're not running into traffic, but we also like let them experience those falls so that they can learn what it feels like to have too much. Yeah. And so my own kids, like I'll let them eat to the point, like sometimes I'm thinking in my head, oh my goodness, like how could they possibly want so much? And they'll eat. And sometimes they'll say, yeah, I have a tummy ache now. And we'll reflect on it. Oh, do you think it was because you had that second bowl of ice cream? Like maybe that didn't feel so good in your body. So then they reflect on that. And then the next time they make a decision, maybe not to have that second scoop or second bowl or whatever it is. So they need to learn from their own kind of experiences. So if you are just getting started on this journey, I think the first and foremost, have the discussion with your kids. Things are going to be different. These are the changes we're going to be making. And then expect them to test you. Expect them to ask for second, thirds, fourths on the bread, if that's something that you normally kind of limited them to one piece. And let them, you know, explore and realize that you're not going back on this. This is going to be forever. And it is hard sometimes for parents to watch because they're, especially if your child is in a larger body and you have restricted them in the past, which we know, unfortunately, is pretty normal, especially in females. Like if you have a larger body, and this is from a place of wanting to help them. It's not like parents are ever trying to hurt their kids, but they're coming from a place of like, I don't want you to be in a larger body because you might get picked on, you might get bullied, you might get teased. So we might restrict kids with the thought of like, if I just don't let them have any sweets or carbs or whatever it is, then they're not going to have that problem. But then we see that what happens is that it becomes like more of an obsession. So if they're secretively eating in their room or whatever. So if we're noticing, like, so if you are like loosening the reins, expect your kids to overeat in the beginning. And that's normal. It usually gets worse before it gets better, but it will level out. Yeah. And once they trust you that you're not going to restrict them, then their eating then will level out and become more balanced.
Mm-hmm. I have a story. I one Halloween when I started really learning all of this stuff, and I'm like, oh my goodness, okay, how am I going to do Halloween different? And I did that. We went trick-or-treating. My little guy was like, you can eat all your candy, just go for it, right? And I was terrified. I'm like, oh my god, right? But in the end, he would think he was like seven. He's like, Mom, why did you let me do that? Now my candy's gone and I have a tummy ache. But it was amazing because we talked about that. He's like, oh yeah. And then from there, I started just letting, I have three kids, they have candy collections in their room. So they each have a tackle box, like for fishing. And this was scary for me at first too, right? Because as a kid, for me, there was the restriction. I just would have eaten everything all the time because from what we're talking about. And I'm like, you guys, this is, here's your candy, right? And so if we were at a party or whatever, they would have however much, and then they come home and put it in there. We didn't hide it. It didn't. And now they're teenagers and they all still have these candy collections in there. And I have not had to regulate it at all. It's amazing how it has worked. And yes, it was terrifying. And yes, there was wrappers all over the room at first, right? And now they'll have Easter candy, and the next Easter comes along, they're like, oh, maybe I'm going to take this out because it's kind of stale and I have my new Easter candy to put in there. Yeah. Right? And I think it's great because they do have it, and but it's a way that really is serving their bodies. And that is so fun to me that there's just no hang up on it. And it was harder with my older one because he had more years of me teaching him that to be scared of food, right? And my youngest one, he's just like, oh, okay, this is just what he saw being raised. And it's pretty neat. So I love what you're teaching, and, you know, seeing it in my own home and how my kids are now, they have so much more freedom than I ever did. And yes, they still have food hangups because yes, I still do. Right. So we're working on that together, but it's pretty, pretty freaking amazing, the freedom that this brings, you know, this approach. So my last question is, what about blended families or co-parenting situations? Okay. If you're intuitive eating and you're raising your children like this in this home, and then they go to their other home and there's the food restriction, maybe there's, you know, all sorts of this stuff going on. How would you encourage people, like parents, to approach that sort of situation?
And so I think this is a challenging one because, you know, parents are going to have very different views on many different things. So food and, you know, rules and boundaries and screen time and whatever. So as much as possible, I think if you have a good relationship with your partner or ex-partner, you know, saying, you know, giving them a bit of information in terms of like what you're working on, any resources that you can share with them to help guide them, and say like, this is what we're doing, this is why, so that they're on board as much as possible. But say you have an example of a family, they're really not on board. Like they're doing their own thing. They're living in diet culture still. And you are not. So I think as best we can with our kids, we can just say, in our house, we believe X. In our house, we believe that all foods give us something. All foods are nourishing and we don't need to restrict any foods. You know, you might have different rules at your dad or mom's house, but in our house, we believe X, Y, and Z. So like you can't do anything. You can't force another family to change. And so I think you can just say, reinforce. And this is what I also teach families if they're teacher or like it conversely, like if a teacher is teaching food freedom and, you know, intuitive eating and the parents are not there, teachers can say in our classroom, we believe that X, Y, and Z. And then parents, if they're noticing, I mean, you can have a discussion with your teacher too. But I think you can also just reinforce that this is the rules of our house. This is the rules of our family. Just like, you know, in our house, we have 2 hours of screen time a day, and at dad's house, you have 4 hours or whatever it is. Like in our house, we believe that blah, blah, blah. So I think you just need to like try as best as possible to get on board with the same things, but it's not always going to be possible. And I think that's okay too. Kids will learn, and like same thing, like other families. Like I always tell the kids that come to our house for visits or come for dinner, like I'll always say like in our house, you know, we serve dessert on the plate. And we also say that you don't need to try anything you don't want to. You don't need to eat anything you don't want to. You can eat as much or as little as anything that comes on your plate. So when they go to other kids' houses, my kids, different rules are going to be in different houses, right? So they just need to adapt to whatever the rules are of that family and know that, like, your family, these are the rules of your family and your household. So I don't know, have you noticed anything different with your blended family?
Oh, for sure. All of these things are coming up. It's funny because I'm like asking you this for my listeners and I'm like, I really want to ask her this because this is this thing we're running into right now.
Yeah,
it for sure is. My daughter is 14 and at her dad's home, her stepmom, definitely I understand she's trying to do it, like we were saying, for the best for my daughter, right? This is what she believes, but she was encouraging her to fast in the morning as a weight thing, like a weight management thing. And I really, like, wow, that was really hard, you know, when that came back to me. And my daughter and I, she's older, so we were able to have a really good conversation around it. And she actually said, I'm choosing not to do that for my body, right? And it wasn't like, my mom says this or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was really empowering for her, but it's more difficult for the younger ones.
Yes.
And it can be pretty confusing, I think.
Yeah. And I think, like, I mean, certain things, I think, for example, dieting behaviors, when we teach dieting behaviors, so like, I'm a strong believer that like dieting behaviors predict eating disorders and obesity as well.
Yeah.
In adolescence as adults. So like, if you teach children to diet, so what we're trying to teach them as parents, we're trying to help them have a healthy relationship with food, but it's doing the opposite if we're teaching them dieting.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's like, hey, here's the literature on, you know, dieting practices in kids. If we teach kids to diet, they actually either develop eating disorders often or are heavier than if we just didn't teach them that. Right. Yeah. So I think sometimes it's about sharing resources, you know, because I think this is our area, it's particularly of interest to us. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's like finding the resources and saying like, hey, like, did you see like this study that actually found these results? So, you know, I would really appreciate it if we didn't teach them dieting practices because, you know, even though we're well-meaning, it actually has these long-term detrimental effects. So what we're trying to avoid is actually, we're like now making that happen because of what we're teaching them. So yeah, I think like sometimes
sometimes that's easier said than done. Sending things to the ex.
I know.
I hear you for sure. And I think that that's where, you know, having the conversations with the kids around, here's the food on your plate, you know, when they're little and what do you want to eat and how much and allowing that, it really does open the conversation when they're a bit older, you know, like I had with my daughter. Right.
So exactly.
I love that. And then just that empowerment. I'm actually wanting to bring my daughter Celeste on the podcast and interview her as a teen being raised as an intuitive eater. Right.
And love
like,
that.
And I'm really excited for that. She's a little nervous. She's like, I'm not ready for that, mom, but she will. And I'm really looking forward to it. So yes, but it's a complicated thing. You know, when you really, like for me, this is my passion. This is what I've made my life purpose, right? So it's like, when you have the other family and I know like the heart's in the right place. So I definitely don't want to create drama or chaos around it, obviously, but it's like how, anyway.
Oh, it's hard. It's hard stuff. And I think like in our household, like my husband defers like all nutrition stuff to me. So like, so that's where like, when it's a split family, like it's harder, right? Because you're trying to, you have four different opinions, especially if both parents have partners, right? It's four sets of ideas instead of two, which is always going to be more complicated. So
yeah.
I think we just do the best we can, right? And like reinforce the messages at our house and then try to, in a non like, you know, confrontational way, like share resources and share ideas and come at it. Like, you know, is it possible to try X, Y, or Z and see it, you know, and see if we can come up with like a collaborative approach rather than that confrontational, you know, cause I it's hard, right? Cause they have oftentimes the other family will have the children half the time. So, you know, it's coming to that balance.
Yeah, it really is. And I think grace, right? One of the things I teach so much, obviously, is like having compassion and curiosity for yourself. That's one of the pillars of my own program. So then I'm like, how can I have compassion and just get curious here, you know, in that approach as well, so that it doesn't become a weird food fight in a different way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is also not good either, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I lied. I actually want to ask you one more question.
Okay. One more question. Yeah, of course.
One more question. Going back to sugar. So I know there's a lot of messages around about sugar addiction. Okay. Mm-hmm. And how it's just as addictive as heroin and all of this stuff, right? There's a lot going around about that. And so I know that there's a lot of fear for parents to be able to say, yes, here you go. Sugar is on the menu, for example, today, because there's this thought that it's actually going to, the brain chemistry is going to cause addiction and it's not going to be able to self-regulate and all of that. Okay. So how do you approach that?
Yeah. So, I mean, the literature on sugar addiction is really interesting because, well, for one, it's done on rats.
Yeah.
So when we look at rat studies, the only time that we see these addictive like behaviors is when the rat is deprived or starved of sugar.
Right.
So we don't see children. So addiction, if we think of addiction, like in the traditional sense, like think of the characteristics of addiction. So, you know, one of the things is like increasing tolerance. So like you need more and more to like make you feel satisfied. Mm-hmm. The other thing is if you don't have it, you are driven to it more, right?
Right.
So, I mean, there are some things that kind of sound like addiction, but it has, in fact, we haven't seen the addictive characteristics similar to like drugs or alcohol. Like we don't see people going to the grocery store and drinking vats of corn syrup, right? Like it doesn't have that same. So oftentimes like a lot of the addictive properties of it are more like they are, we do feel that addiction, but it's more to do with restriction than it is addiction. So if we allow ourselves, and we call this habituation. Mm-hmm. So if we allow ourselves access to sugar regularly, we actually see a decline in the drive to want to eat it. So in habituation, we see the frequent exposure to a stimulus decreases the draw for it. So if you repeatedly allow your kids to have sugar, instead of them wanting sugar more, they're going to want it less. Mm-hmm. So sugar, it has been debunked in the addictive quality because we don't see people doing these extreme behaviors to get sugar like we do in other substances. But it can be scary for parents to let go. But just know that if you are offering sugar more often, it actually has the exact opposite effect of addiction. You're going to actually have kids that want sugar less. Like I get lunch boxes now with like desserts left in the lunchbox. So
yeah. Isn't that fun? I have like I never thought I would do this. Like in the past nutritionist Chansey, I have a treat drawer and I'm like, what do you guys want? I'm going, they're like Oreos, Pop-Tarts. I'm like, okay. And I put it in there and it's not this like free for all gone. Like it lasts until next shopping day. Not at first, but now it does. And
yeah,
I can have Oreo cookies in the house now for me and I forget about them. Whereas in the past I would have had them and my brain would have been obsessed. And then it's like, I actually remember thinking if I just eat the whole bag, then they'll be gone and I won't be thinking about it. And it totally felt like addiction. Absolutely. So I can understand.
I totally understand. Yeah.
Yes. And now I'm like, do I really, actually, those are kind of like boring. Like I'm not been drawn to them anymore. So I thank you for that. And yes, I just really want to encourage parents to, if this is what you want to do, right? If this is, if your heart is being pulled in this, like get support and stay on the path because it's worth it. And yes, it's hard. Yes, it can be scary. Yes, sometimes you're going to think, oh my goodness, like I'm doing the total wrong thing. But no, right? Like research shows, real life shows, like this works. So so
100%.
Yes. Oh, you are so fun. I literally want to catch the ferry and go over and visit with you for a whole
afternoon.
I'm like, this is great. So is there anything last, like a pearl of wisdom you'd love to leave the listeners with?
I would just say like, give yourself some compassion as parents. Mm-hmm. we have so much pressure on us to be perfect at everything, be perfect at feeding our kids, be perfect at, you know, discipline, be perfect at getting them in school, blah, 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 like all this stuff. So I think like have some compassion for yourself. Like we're just people. We were raised in diet culture. So if you have felt like maybe you've been doing things, you know, in a way that isn't super supportive and your kid does, you do seem to think that they have addictions to sugar or whatnot, you're not a failure. You haven't done anything wrong. And just, you know, forgive yourself for that. Mm-hmm. Because I think, you know, we don't need more guilt and shame as parents. Like we already have so much pressure on us to be perfect that we're all just doing the best we can. And, you know, when we know better, we do better. And so we have this opportunity now to change the narrative for our kids. So lean into that and help. It will help your kids, but also help you heal your own relationship with food and your body.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful wisdom. Where can people find you? Number one, that's a question. And I love your Instagram. It's so fun. I don't follow many people because I post and I get off, right? But yours, I'm like, oh, she has another reel. Like you guys, you got to follow Jen. And she has such a fun feed going on with tons of amazing wisdom. So tell us that, where to find you there. And then any offers you'd like to give here, any programs you have coming up or whatever. I didn't ask you that before. So I'm like, oh, this is interesting.
Yeah, totally. So I'm on Instagram. You can find me there. I'm pretty active there. I'm at Jen, the dietitian. Mm-hmm. And that's dietitian spelled the Canadian way with a T instead of a C. So you can find me there. I'm also on my website, which is jenmessina.com, which Chancey can share. And then I have a program which is open for a waitlist right now. It's called Body Positive Kids. Mm. So this is a course for parents who are looking to help support their kids to have a healthier relationship with food in their body, to change the narrative around how they feed their kids, to talk about movement in a way that's not punishing. So I'm actually revamping the course right now. We've run it a few times with a lot of success. So I'm just revamping it right now. So if you are interested in that, it's a 6-week module. Like there'll be 6 modules, each broken up into like individual components, what parents can watch at a self pace, but also have a community of support and have some one-to-one time with me as well through some calls. So feel free to drop your name on the wait list and I will let you know when that course is open for enrollment. It is pretty popular. So get your name on that. And then you can also, if you're interested in chatting with me about yourself or your family, I have a free 15-minute call on my website, which you can click on and find a spot. I'm currently booking about 2 months in advance. So if you are interested, please get your name in ASAP. You can book straight away on the website as well. If you don't think you need a call, but you know, you're always open to having a call. And again, it's about 2 months in advance. So book yourself in there in advance so that you can see me. And once you're in, so it's a bit of a longer wait for my new clients. But that's just because my practice is full. But once you're in and we will make sure to follow up regularly as you need to help support you. Heal your relationship with food.
Wonderful. So good. And we'll have all of that information in the show notes. So people, if you're listening and you're like trying to jot all this down, just go to the notes. All the links are there. We've got you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me today.
Thank you. This has been so great. And I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day.
Thank you so much, Chancey. Okay. Talk to you later.
Thank you for investing this time into building a nurturing and loving relationship with food and your body. My vision is to create a community of women who desire to taste this freedom too. So please pass this episode on to a friend, a sister, a mom, or anyone who desires love from the inside out. And if you're feeling extra spicy, please leave me a review on iTunes so we can get this in the hands of women everywhere. See you next time.